Welcome back. Welcome back to JFK Spotlight on Health, where we highlight the groundbreaking work being done at JFK University Medical Center in Edison. This is part of the Hackensack Meridian Health Network. I'm Joel Katz, and joining me this week is Dr. Frank Cunningham. Dr. Cunningham is director of the Pediatric Emergency Medicine at JFK University Medical Center. Good morning.
Good morning, Joel.
Yeah, great to have you here. Now, we want to talk about cardiac arrest today because it's been trending in the news for the past few years, actually. There's been deaths of student-athletes. Most recently, Bronny James, LeBron James' son, 18 years old, taken to the hospital when he went into cardiac arrest during a basketball workout. It was tied to a yet-to-be-named congenital defect. Mm-hmm. And NFL player DeMar Hamlin, we remember that. That was all over the news. He was 25 all at right. the time. He's back in the NFL, but he suffered a cardiac arrest as a result of a blow to the chest during a game. Lisa Marie Presley died at 54 from a cardiac arrest as well, and then her cause of death was tied to some sort of a bowel obstruction. So we don't have to go into every one of those individually. I'd like to do that if you're well-versed in what happened in those particular cases. But I do want to talk about, obviously, cardiac arrest and what causes sudden cardiac arrest. If we can start there.
Sure. Well, it could be a variety of causes, of course. But one of the things that is interesting is that, you know, when the heart stops, basically there's no blood flow to any of the vital organs, including the brain. So, you know, people, unless they're are resuscitated immediately, will succumb to it and die. But, you know, the interesting thing is that these things have been happening in athletes. And if you think about the spectrum of the type of people in society, is that athletes are the most toned and conditioned people.
Yeah.
So, like, why would this be happening to someone who's so conditioned and in physically tip-top shape? It's just completely baffling. And that's the odd thing about the whole thing.
Yeah, I didn't even thought about that aspect of it. That they're in the best shape in better shape than most people. Yet it's still happening to them. I looked at it from the standpoint it's happening to young people.
Correct, exactly. And you know these are people who have not had years of abuse to their body, and generally are in fairly good shape. So it's very unusual, or certainly raises an eyebrow when it does happen. And it certainly has been hitting the spotlight in the news recently for not only the cases that you've highlighted, but and you know you'll have other in various communities, but something will happen. Maybe it's not as noted in as celebrity related stuff, but they do happen.
Could you talk about the most common ones?
Well, there's a couple of things. Is that certainly with the sudden cardiac arrest. There's a few different explanations, one of which is an unrecognized congenital heart muscle defect or disease called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, which, over time, the heart muscle will get thicker and thicker. And if there's no symptoms, the people may not even be aware they even have it. Mm-hmm. So one of these events happen, and it's probably only after a death that on autopsy they would recognize this. So they could be completely asymptomatic until this happens. And there's other things that can be related to it as well with regard to some arrhythmias. Which, if there's some sort of underlying electrical defect in the heart, which may not manifest itself under normal conditions, but sometimes with other confounding variables such as dehydration or excessive epinephrine or excited surge, electrolyte imbalances, these changes in your body's chemistry can make these people who are subject to these arrhythmias or underlying electrical disturbances come out even more because now they're basically vulnerable to them. And the other instance is the one case that you cited with the blow with one of the football
athletes. Hamlin, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So what happens with that is that if there's a sudden blow during a particular part of the cardiac cycle, it's a vulnerable period. So if there's a blow during that exact time, it could throw the heart into an arrhythmia and cause a sudden death. It's called commotio cordis.
Is this, he got hit at just the right spot, or was this going to happen either way?
No, it was just the right spot, just the right time in the electrical cycle of his heart beating, and it, just at the right time and the right cycle, and it's rare, but it happens. It's been documented over time.
And LeBron James' son, that was the congenital, the first one that you mentioned, the congenital issue.
Hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. And, you know, again, you would not notice it or know it if you had no symptoms. And what happens as a result of these patients, if they're found to have this, generally it's could be genetic. So it's important in those particular families is that if this is indeed found, that other family members should be screened for this particular problem.
Now, you mentioned that sometimes there, or most of the time, there are no symptoms. But if there were symptoms, what would those symptoms be? Something to look at. If I have a child, you know, parents listening, and my child has, you know, chest pain once in a while. I'm just making something up, but I would imagine a reason to get them to the doctor to get this checked out, because it's possible that they have one of these three that you mentioned, or they may succumb to one of these three conditions.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're experiencing any kind of chest pain or shortness of breath or any kind of palpitations where you feel a regular heartbeat or your heart beating fast, those should be trigger points to say, listen, maybe, you know, we should get this evaluated just to make sure that there's nothing potentially going on. And it could be very, you know, enlightening and could be life-saving too.
Yeah, because you don't know where it's coming from. I would imagine that some people, kids, all right, we're talking about kids, but also adults, they ignore some of the, they may not be severe symptoms, but they're like, oh, I just got a little pain today, and then it turns out to be something like this.
Correct. Yeah, and you never know. You really just never know, and I think if you're overly concerned enough, and certainly if there's a, you know, a history, a family history of maybe sudden death at an early age, these things are something that really needs to be taken more seriously, and a further investigation should be done. Now, the other thing is, you know, can you really screen every student athlete in the United States? Is it really cost effective? But what's your yield on basically picking up the one in so many thousands? You know, and that's kind of controversial. You know, where do you draw the line? How do you screen all these athletes? Does everybody need to be screened? What do you do with the screening? You know, or what does the screening entail? And that's you know, kind of it's very difficult.
Is it too much to ask that because my kids all through school they had to have a physical and certain tests done every year, or they couldn't go to school, to add this as one of the tests? Is it just too much, do you think?
Well, I think, you know, if the parents are overly concerned, they could take that added measure of comfort and at least maybe investigating if there was potentially anything they're at risk for.
Why not?
Yeah. I mean, they can't do that. You know, it may not be, you know, there's other people who may not. But I think that's, you know, the individual thing with regard to you know, the parents and what they feel comfortable with their child. And they may certainly should have a good and informed discussion with their own pediatrician or family practice doctor to, you know, advise them and guide them to, you know, what it is they should do or do they need to have consultation and just give them some sort of guidance so they're just not, you know, willy-nilly walling, you know, trying to figure out what to do themselves.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking about student athletes, but this could happen to any child. I mean, you don't have to be a student athlete, play on a school team to play sports. So any of these things that we're talking about could happen to any child.
Absolutely, and even any young adult as well, because you just never know if you indeed have some sort of underlying issue. So you don't have to really be a conditioned athlete. It's just more, you know, concerning and alarming that this is happening, can happen to a conditioned athlete. What about the ones, you know, students or you know, younger adults who are just casual, you know, sports enthusiasts who participate in like weekend basketball mm-hmm. or soccer or flag football and stuff like that? That can happen to them as well.
Right, and we should point out, we're not trying to panic anybody, but want to make sure that people are looking out for certain things.
Correct, yeah, and I think that's important. They really should not panic, you know, if they're really concerned, they can just, you know, get some advice from their pediatrician.
Our guest this week is Dr. Frank Cunningham, Director of Pediatric Emergency Medicine at JFK University Medical Center in Edison. How often do you see this? And I guess the overall question is, how common is this that you see in children, in young adults, or in student athletes?
Now, it's very rare. It really is.
Okay.
And I think that's the thing, is when they do happen, it becomes news because it's so rare that it happens.
What's the difference? And I always thought that they were very similar. I guess they are, because we're talking about the heart. What's the difference between a heart attack and cardiac arrest?
Well, a heart attack is actually an event that can cause some occlusion or blockage of the blood flow to a certain portion mm-hmm. of the heart. And when that happens, if their blood is deprived to portions of the heart, that particular heart muscle dies. And if enough heart muscle dies, it proceeds to cardiac dysfunction and potentially cardiac arrest if it's not treated. So cardiac arrest is actually an end of progression of events in that cycle.
Right. So it could be a part of a heart attack, but a heart attack isn't always the case.
Correct.
And the examples being the ones we've addressed thus far.
That's correct.
So what can, we talked about, maybe getting your child or your young adult checked for this, even though there are no symptoms, but what other type of precautions can be taken, either by parents or by schools, to prevent the worst case scenario?
Well, I think they just probably just need to just be, the particular coaches and staff should be aware of what's going on with their individual athletes and notice any kind of maybe problems or difficulties they may be having, and maybe just address those, their concerns with the parents. But for the most part, they're probably not going to be many signs or symptoms in young children.
I saw a piece, I don't know, something like 60 Minutes or a news program like that, it was a story about a school. They compared schools that had these AEDs, so we're going to talk about AEDs, and those who had them, but then they weren't really readily available.
Yeah.
The AED, then this is the automated external defibrillator, and they're usually hanging on a wall somewhere in a school, mm-hmm. but they don't get used very often. So could you touch on, you know, how they work, where they came from, and then additional things that these schools need to do other than just have one somewhere in the school?
Yeah.
As opposed to having them ready to go at all times.
Correct. I think that the most important thing is the fact that they should have people who are trained in proper performance of CPR, cardiopulmonary resuscitation, by bystanders. That's very important too. Now the AEDs are a device that's pretty much automatic. It is automatic. That's what the name is there. And what they do is it's very easy to operate. Any layperson can do it.
It has the instructions right on there, right?
It basically talks to you.
Mm-hmm.
It talks to you. You put it on the ground. You open up the kit. Turn it on, and it tells you to place the paddles, shows you where there's a diagrams about where to place the paddles,
mm-hmm.
and then it instructs you what to do next, to press the button, and then what it does is that it analyzes the rhythm, and then it'll say shock advised or shock not advised. So it's going to tell you what to do, and it's very simple. The thing is, I think sometimes people don't know where these things are, and I think there should be a general familiarity about what the locations of these devices are within the institution.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're out in the field, that certainly part of the equipment that you bring in there, that should be something that's readily available as well. I think people may be reluctant to use it just because they're afraid that they're going to do harm. But in those situations, there's no worse harm than dying. So anything you're going to do is going to be potentially beneficial for the patient. And it's not going to let you shock a patient unnecessarily because it's advising you based upon the analysis of the rhythm. But these things should be very, very readily available. I mean, just to give you just an indication about, you know, with the effectiveness of bystander CPR, the ratio of survival from patients receiving bystander CPR during cardiac arrest is about 50%. In contrast, the people who don't get it, that all cases were fatal. The important thing, too, is that the greatest determinant for survival after a cardiac arrest is the time from the collapse to basically defibrillation, with survival rates from between 7 to 10% per minute for every minute lost. That's what happens, is that you get declining survival rates with every minute lost from cardiac arrest to restoring a rhythm.
Right, I remember that. I remember that about the story because they were looking for the AED, and they were talking about, well, if they would have had it ready to go where it should be. I think it was in a storage room or something like that. Someone had to run out. They were in a gym. They had to run out into the field and ask somebody. Like, every second counts.
Exactly. Every second counts because every second with no blood flow to the brain or oxygen to the brain is brain cells lost.
Yeah, and I wanted to point that out because I didn't realize the main thing I didn't realize was how easy it is to use because it basically tells you as you go. So
exactly.
For someone like I might see one on the wall and then someone's having a cardiac arrest, which I obviously wouldn't know was cardiac arrest. I wouldn't know what it was, but I'm like, oh, I can grab that. But is there someone here who knows how to use it? But everybody knows how to use it because it tells you what to do.
Correct. And, you know, if it wasn't so easy to use, they wouldn't post it publicly. That's the whole thing, you know, because certainly a lot of places be worried about liability and stuff like that. But these devices have been thoroughly studied and certainly improved over the years, but they are pretty much foolproof and they are a lifesaver. They can be a lifesaver. And, you know, if it's your child or somebody else's child, you know, be able to know that you use this device and now they're here as opposed to not using it. And then you could have been, should have, could have, would have, when you're in retrospect.
I have a fact here. Well, you know, we talked about how this is very rare, but this is from the American Academy of Pediatrics, and they estimate that approximately 2,000 people under the age of 25 die from sudden cardiac arrest in the U.S. each year. What can be done? Again, I'm going back to a parent listening right now, and I'm one of those parents. I'm not, you know, I had kids who were athletes, and they still are, but there's no symptoms, there's no signs, so everything's great, and then you get these surprises like LeBron James had, basically. What can be done to prevent that or try to prevent that event from happening?
It could be very difficult. If your child is having any sort of symptoms or anything that you might be concerned about, it might behoove you just to get it checked out. Most kids will be fine, but it's just the one that you just, you know, don't know about. And it's a matter of picking, you know, that needle out of the haystack that, you know, this could be, you know, like one of those situations.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of saying like people should be proactive, but it's just, it's so rare and people think, oh, okay, this is not a problem. I'm not going to schedule a trip to the doctor for something that I have no signs or symptoms of, or my child doesn't. But is that something you would recommend if someone comes to you? Obviously, if someone comes to you and says, listen, I got no problems here. I just want to make sure everything's okay. You're not going to ask them to leave. Like, let's say I come in with my daughter. She's 18. Hey, she hasn't had any issues. But I just want to make sure because I read about this, the Damar Hamlin, Bronny James. What do you say to a parent that comes in with a child with that?
Yeah, I would. You know, first of all, I think what will be important too is the family history, you know, because generally these things can run in families. And, you know, you may know it, you may not know it. But if there is that past family history, I think it might behoove you to at least, you know, get some basic workup with, you know, possibly an EKG. And depending upon the EKG findings and other things that you might do further testing, like an echocardiogram, which would basically shoot sound waves, ultrasound waves, into the heart. And they measure the size of the heart muscle and the walls of the heart muscle. So that would probably easily identify one of those conditions, like the hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, by looking at the size of the chambers and give you an idea whether that is or isn't present. And, you know, that's the thing. An EKG could be also, you know, show you other things with regard to maybe some conduction abnormalities on the EKG that, you know, may raise concerns or certainly may deserve some further investigation. Sometimes if you have some abnormalities in the cycle time or the interval times in between the heartbeats, that could potentially be looked into and see if this is a potential risk for anything going forward.
Before we wrap it up, let's say I witness something like this happening, whether it be a family friend or just a stranger on the street, and they collapse. I'm going to call 911. But is there anything that I can do before they get there? Because as we talked about, time is important, and especially with sudden cardiac arrest. Is there anything anyone could do until paramedics arrive that would be helpful to the person who is suffering potential cardiac arrest?
Well, you know, like I said, time is of the essence with regard to preservation of brain flow. So certainly bystander CPR would be very, very important for at least preserving some degree of blood flow. And high-quality CPR, where there's good compressions in the chest and being able to, you know, move blood through until the medics get there. Some people, you know, may or may not feel comfortable with doing mouth to mouth, and you know, the American Heart Association says that, you know, that certainly bystander chest compressions, high quality compressions, would be very effective until the medics get there.
Even if we don't know what it is, I mean, it could be somebody might just faint, right? So
faint? Yeah. You can just maybe. They look for responsiveness. You can maybe check a pulse. The easiest thing to check a pulse, maybe on the side of the neck where you could feel some pulsations and everything. But those are the things that you would probably look for. Again, you'd like you said, you dial 911 and get some help.
Right, of course. That's the first thing you would do. But let's say someone falls to the ground and I found a pulse, I feel a heartbeat. Is there anything else I should be doing?
You could just make sure the airway is...
Make sure they're breathing. Okay.
Make sure they're breathing. Make sure the airway is patent that, you know, they can breathe. If there's potential for any kind of neck injury, then you might want to just kind of hold their head still so they don't move their neck and potentially, you know, have a neck fracture or anything like that.
One more question before I let you go.
Sure.
If I administer CPR on somebody and they didn't need CPR, is there any danger there?
Generally not, but okay. I think you'll probably wind up finding out that you may not need it.
Right.
But generally not.
But if you don't know, I'm looking at, you know, as a doctor, you know, you're going to look at somebody who is, you know, is on the ground, and you'd be able to determine probably rather quickly what they might need. There's a lot of people like me who are like, I don't know, they're just laying there. What do I do? Maybe I should do CPR just to make sure.
You can do that. Check for pulse.
Okay. All right.
Check for responsiveness. Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure. All right. Well, thank you, Doctor. Dr. Frank Cunningham, Director of Pediatric Emergency Medicine at JFK University Medical Center. Thank you for joining me once again.
Thank you, Joel.
For more information, you can go to jfkmc.org. For a podcast of the show, you can go to foxsportsradionewjersey.com. This is JFK Spotlight on Health, and it's brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health. Keep getting better. I'm Joel Katz. We'll talk again next week.